Hello and welcome to our morning Bible study. Today is July 2nd, 2020, and we are in the 13th chapter of 2 Samuel. So why don't you go ahead and read 2 Samuel chapter 13, verses 23 through 39, which is the end of the chapter. And after you're done reading, go ahead and unpause your audio and we will dive right into the text. Okay. So, again, we are looking at kind of the fall of David. And what we mentioned yesterday is that David has begun to be a passive participant in his life at this point. Now, there's something really significant here that I don't really think I got a chance to go into much yesterday. But when we look at chapter 13, okay, so we look at chapter... really all of chapter 13 and then really the end of chapter 12, after David committed his sin with Bathsheba and God had pronounced the judgment upon David, it becomes very interesting that David is really not the main character in the story. The dramatic action does not revolve around David. It revolves around Absalom and what Absalom chooses to do. And David largely becomes a passive participant in his own life. And I don't think that's accidental. I think that that's actually a very deliberate choice on the part of the authors, the recorders of the divine record, that when you sin, when we fall, we no longer put ourselves in the driver's seat. The amazing thing is, and this is I know that this sounds counterintuitive in our culture, but we think in our culture that sin is going to bring you freedom. But sin does not bring you freedom, and sin does not bring you agency. Sin is slavery. When you sin, you make yourself a passive participant in your own life. Righteousness allows you to be an active participant. Righteousness gives you agency. Sin brings only slavery. And I think that that's significant, that the way that the story is told in 2 Samuel is David is pushed out of the foreground, even though the material is about David. He's not the one driving and directing the action. He becomes a passive participant in his own life. And I think that that's something worth noting. I don't think that's a small thing. I think that that's something that maybe we're not supposed to, well, not that we're not supposed to, but I don't know that we're supposed to be drawn actively to that. I don't know that that's supposed to be something consciously brought up to us, but I think it's supposed to be there working at a subconscious level, reminding us that that's what's happening. And then maybe, you know, when you get some handsome and outstanding preachers who can point these things out to us, that we're supposed to draw on them. But I think that that's significant. And also, you know, look to my website, lukenagy.com, because I think I might write something on that here either today or within the next couple days, because I think that's maybe giving it a little more time. I think that's a significant doctrine that's being taught here. But with that background information, remember what happens. Absalom, he is furious because his brother Amnon raped his sister Tamar. Tamar was a full sister. Amnon was a half brother. And this happens and David does nothing. David's mad, but he doesn't do anything. And so Absalom has been kind of plotting for a couple years now. And so 2 years later, we read in verse 23, 2 years later, Absalom's sheep shearers were in Baal Hazor near Ephraim. Absalom invited all the king's sons. So all of his brothers, again, all the king's sons. We're downplaying the relationship here. Then Absalom went to the king, his father, and said, "My shearers have begun their work. Let the king and his servants go with me." But the king said to Absalom, "No, my son, we shouldn't all go. We shouldn't burden you in that way." Though Absalom pressed him, the king was not willing to go. Instead, David blessed him. Now that's a significant piece right there. Right there. And I am not the first person to mention this. David is blessing his son as his son goes to plan to murder his brother. David bears a lot of responsibility for what happens. Now, does Absalom bear responsibility? Sure he does. Absalom's the one who commits the murder. But why does Absalom commit the murder? Because of what Amnon did. And frankly, I don't think Absalom was wrong. I mean, he was wrong in the way he carried it out, but was he really that wrong? Was Absalom really that wrong to have killed Amnon? As far as I can tell, Amnon deserved to die according to the law. He deserved to die, although so did David. And as far as I can tell, according to the law, if the father was not going to step in, does the brother have the right to? Now, the law is not clear on that, and I would want to talk to an expert in Torah about this. But if he wants to act as the avenger, as the kinsman redeemer, I don't know why Absalom can't do this. It seems to me that he's within his rights. Or he's so close to being within his rights that it's really hard to criticize him. So Absalom says, look, if you're not going to go, then let Amnon go. Let my brother Amnon. Now, see, it's interesting. He invited all the king's sons. But now when he wants to wheedle his way, he says, my brother, not the king's son. The king said to him, why should he go with you? Now, obviously, David knows there's something going on here. Nobody is stupid. They know that there is bad blood between Absalom and Amnon. But when Absalom pressed him, he sent Amnon and all the king's sons along with him. And Absalom instructed his servants, look, when Amnon is drunk and I say to you, strike Amnon down, kill him then and there. Don't fear. Is it not I who have given you these instructions? Be strong and courageous. Now, that be strong and courageous, again, that's a really interesting expression. And because, you know, it harkens back to what we have in Joshua. Now, I don't believe it's I don't think it's the exact same phrasing, but it's similar. It's similar language. And so he's saying, be strong and courageous. And so Absalom's servants did to Amnon exactly what Absalom had instructed. And then all the king's sons got up and each rode away on his mule and fled. While they were still on their way, the following report reached David. Absalom has killed all the king's sons. Not one of them is left. The king stood up and tore his garments and lay down on the ground, and all of his servants were standing there with torn garments as well. So David is believing that all of his kids are dead. And Jonadab, by the way, Jonadab, the one who told Amnon how to plan to rape his sister, Jonadab, who told his cousin how to rape his other cousin, Jonadab, the son of David's brother Shemaiah, said, my lord should not say they have killed all the young men who are the king's sons, for only Amnon is dead. This is what Absalom has talked about from the day that Amnon humiliated his sister Tamar. Now, don't let the lord the king be concerned about the report that has come saying all the king's sons are dead. It is only Amnon who is dead. So it's like, well, Jonadab, how do you know this? Oh, yeah, you don't think this was information that you should have shared with the king? In the meantime, Absalom fled. And when the servant who was the watchman looked up, he saw many people coming from the west on the road beside the hill. And Jonadab said to the king, look, the king's sons have come. It's just as I said. As though that's somehow good news for David. It's like, hey, it's okay, David. Not all of your sons have been murdered. Just one of your sons has been murdered. You know, don't take it so hard. And just as he finished speaking, the king's sons arrived wailing and weeping. The king and his servants wept loudly as well. But Absalom fled and went to King Talmai, the son of Ammihud of Geshur. And David grieved over his son every day. Now, which son did he grieve over? Which son did he grieve over? That's something that the text doesn't tell us, but it's a very interesting thing, isn't it? Verse 38, after Absalom fled and went to Geshur, he remained there for 3 years. The king longed to go to Absalom, for he had since been consoled over the death of Amnon. We look at this text, and this is one of the most sorry and sordid stories in all of Scripture. It is one that it's really difficult to get a hold on. And one of the things that's really important in this story that I don't think we should miss is it's really hard to say who the heroes and who the villains are in this. It's really hard. Now, Amnon is a villain, but he's also murdered. Now, my interpretation of the law of Moses is that Absalom murdering Amnon was within his rights, that it wasn't actually murder, but he was taking on the role of the Goel, of the avenger of blood, or the kinsman redeemer, because or really not even the kinsman redeemer necessarily, but just a person who is doing what should be done in Israel. He's doing what Israel requires. I mean, the Old Testament is fairly clear that there is the death penalty for incest. I think that you can make a very clear argument that what Amnon did was worthy of death. And there's no law that says that, well, there has to be a certain... I think that there probably should have been a trial. But, you know, the rules for how the legal system worked in ancient Israel are are not exactly incredibly clear. I mean, we can draw some inferences, we can make some generalized statements, but it's not like there's a modern legal policy and modern legal standards like we have today. And so we look at what Absalom did, and was Absalom doing it because he wanted to uphold the law of Israel? No. He wanted to do it because he wanted vengeance on his brother who raped his sister. But I don't know that that's entirely wrong either. Like, I don't know that Absalom is in the wrong here. And that's, I'm not saying Absalom was a good dude. I'm just saying I don't know that he's in the wrong in this. Now, was he wrong for creating this plot and lying to his father? Yeah, certainly. Like, the way that he goes about it is certainly underhanded. And Jonadab comes out, like, just being a sneak. Like, I mean, he's just a court spy. Like, I don't think you're supposed to like Jonadab. And I think that what Jonadab is in here, Jonadab is a completely unnecessary character. Completely unnecessary. But I think we're reminded that there were people like Jonadab, because whenever you have positions of power, you're going to have hangers-on and you're going to have courtiers who are there only seeking their own power and influence. And so I think that's why we hear about Jonadab, because you could tell these events without having Jonadab be part of it. And you've got David, and David does not come out looking super good in this. I mean, David did nothing. And later we're going to see that the fact that David did nothing, he did nothing to punish Amnon. He did nothing to defend the honor of his daughter. The fact that David does nothing is ultimately going to be what leads to the course of action that Absalom takes. Now, am I saying David is responsible for what Absalom does? No. But I'm saying that we can explain a lot of Absalom's actions based upon the actions of David. There's a difference between things being related and things being causal. Okay, that's our culture doesn't really differentiate those two things, which is to shame on us for not. You know, there's a difference between an excuse and an explanation. You know, if I show up late for work because I forgot to set my alarm, okay, well, that's an explanation. That's not an excuse. I was still late for work. You know, Absalom did what he did later. When he rebelled against his father, it was wrong. But we can see how David's actions influenced the course of action that Absalom took. So does it explain it? Certainly. Does it excuse it? Certainly not. Right? You can say both things at the same time. Two things can be true at once. And we look at this story, and I think we're confused, because when we read this, we're like, I'm not sure who's right. Like, I don't know who I'm supposed to side with. I don't know who the hero in the story is. I don't know who the villain is. And the reality is, there's not supposed to be a hero or a villain in this story. You're not supposed to read the story and say, oh, well, that's the good guy and that's the bad guy, because that's not how the Bible works. The Bible has one hero and one hero only, and that's Jesus. Like, Jesus is the hero of the story. Everybody else is at best a supporting character, right? Like, it's Jesus. Jesus is the main character. And there are not a whole lot of, like, just good people in the story who are just the heroes of the story. Occasionally you run into them. But most of the Bible, especially in Samuel, especially as we go through the kings, there aren't heroes and villains. Rarely do we see true heroes. Most of the time we see frail and fallen men, and we see that there is chaos because sin reigns in this world. And when sin is allowed to reign, chaos follows. We look at this story and we say, well, golly, I don't know who the good guy is. You don't know who the good guy is because there is no good guy. David is not the hero of the story. Absalom is not the hero of the story. Amnon is not really even particularly the victim in this story. I mean, there's definitely a victim. The victims in this whole narrative are Uriah the Hittite, Tamar, Bathsheba, if Bathsheba was raped. I know that there's a lot of scholarship that's leaning towards that way. I'm still not ready to go there, but some people would say even if it wasn't overt, it was a power rape. Again, not sure that's the case, but, you know, people are going there. But for sure, you want to look at two victims, Uriah and Tamar. When people are victimized and sin is reigning, it creates chaos. And you don't get heroes and villains. You don't get heroes. You just get degrees of crappiness. And that's what we see as in David's kingdom right now, is you don't see the kingdom of Israel being this shining beacon of hope. You see degrees of crappiness. And that's, I think that that should serve as a warning for us, is that when we decide, when we determine that we're going to stray from God, we shouldn't expect that we still get to be, you know, white hats and black hats. We should just expect degrees of crappiness. Anyways, we're going to keep it right at 15 minutes today. So hooray for me. I finally did it. Anyways, I look forward to talking to you tomorrow. God bless. Bye.